This week is Rabbi Avraham's Baritza Parsha. It's Parshat Yitro. Without a doubt, the most central and famous thing in Parshat Yitro is Aseret HaDibrot. But only a close second to it, really, is Perek Yud Tet. Perek Yud Tet is the preparation for Matan Torah. And in the Midrashim and in the Rishonim, there is a lot of discussion and dispute about the order of things, the order of events that even affects Perek Yud Chet, the first part of Yitro, and whether Yitro arrived after Matan Torah or before. But I want to look at a theme that courses through Perek Yud Tet. And it's a theme that we're actually going to start backwards. Instead of starting with Psukim and looking at Midrashim, we're going to start with Midrashim. The first is a Midrash, which is not really a Midrash, meaning a Midrash typically is, of course, operating from Psukim. Psukim are quoted. Psukim are then interpreted using any one of the hermeneutic rules or not. And then other Psukim are often quoted to build up a case for a particular perspective. That's Midrash. We're going to start with a Midrash that's not a Midrash. I call it a Midrash because the first word in the piece is Darash. But Darash doesn't mean he engaged in Midrash. Darash in Babylonian Aramaic is used to say he announced. So for instance, you find several cases in the Gemara where a Chacham wanted to announce a halakha, publicize a halakha, and it says, Nakit le Amora v'Darash. He brought an Amora, a loudspeaker, who then publicized this halakha, right, whatever it may be. So there was a Galilean who came from Galil, and he came to Sura, and he was there with Rav Chista, or in Mechoza, he was there with Rav Chista, and he gave the following homily. Brich Rachmana, blessed is God, Diyahayiv Urian Tlitoi, a threefold Torah. And the notion here, the assumption here, is it's referring to Torah Nevim Ktuvim, which is a division that already exists in the Tanaitic period, so that's fine. La'am Tzlitoi, to a nation that is divided into three parts, Kohen Levi Yisrael, just count your matzahs. Al Yedei Tzlitoi, on through the agency of a third, and the third here is Moshe, is the third child of that, of the parents. Biyom Tlitoi, on the third day, Biyarcha Tlitoi, on the third month. Now, are some of these serendipitous? Is the fact that Moshe is the third from the womb serendipitous? Maybe. What if he had 10 older brothers and sisters? It wouldn't work. We wouldn't put it in. What if there was just Kohen in Israel? That may also be a nice serendipitous piece. And if there was just Torah, but when we get to the last two, Biyom Tlitai and Biyarcha Tlitai, I think there's something very deliberate here. And once those exist, we already move on to the rest and build the case that the entire experience of Matan Torah and of Kabbalat Torah revolves around the number three. And again, the third born child of that union is the one who was the vehicle for giving the Torah, and the nation is divided into three parts, and the Torah itself, Tanakh, is divided into three parts. Okay. But I think it's specifically the third day that I want to operate with. Now, you're going to look at me and say, well, aren't all of these things just really serendipitous? It happened to be the third day. And by the way, it wasn't the third day, because what's the day that we celebrate Matan Torah? We celebrate on Vav Sivan. You know, there was a machlok in the Gemara. We saw it, I think, last year, that Zion Sivan versus Vav Sivan, Rabbi Yossi, Chachamim. Okay, but nobody thinks it's Gimel Sivan. So what's the third day? The third day means the third day of preparation. They were given 3 days of preparation, and on the third day of preparation, they referred to as Shloshit Yimei Hagbalah, the Torah was given. Was it given on the third day of preparation, or was it given after 3 days of preparation? Well, reading the text straightforward, it looks like it's on the third day. And that, I believe, is actually quite deliberate. So I want to take you to a Midrash, which is a Midrash about the Akedah. About the Akedah. Bayom HaShlishi, and this is when Avraham is traveling with his lads, and Yitzchak, who's one of his lads. And after traveling, on the third day, he spies the place from a distance. Bayom HaShlishi. The Midrash goes to town on this phrase. And it starts with a pasuk in Hoshea. In Hoshea, Perek Vav, Pasuk Bet, says Yichayenu mi yomayim, bayomar shlishi yikimenu v'nichya lefanav. I was more than floored to find that this pasuk did not play a central role in Jewish Christian polemic, because it looks like, I mean, it is mentioned in one of the epistles, I think Corinthians or something like that, alluded to, but it doesn't play a big role in the Christian Bible. It's funny because he will bring us back to life after 2 days, and on the third day we will live before him. You could see how that would be a great opening for them. In any case, what does this pasuk have to do with what we're talking about? So Bayom HaShlishi, and the springboard pasuk for the Midrash is a pasuk in Hosea, where it says he will bring us to life after 2 days, or he will keep us alive for 2 days, to machloket rishonim what it means. On the third day, he will raise us and we will live before him. What does it have to do with the Akedah? And how does that connect to the third day when Avram sees the mountain? And ostensibly, that's the day that he goes up to the mountain and does the Akedah. And now notice the Midrash seems to, but doesn't, capture all the events of a third day that happen in Tanakh. Bayom HaShlishi Shel Shvatim. What's the case? Yosef, when the brothers come to Egypt to get the grain, Yosef puts them through the third degree. Sorry for the third again. And they say what they say. And he says, I don't believe you. And if you're really trustworthy, you have to bring your brother here, right? Your younger brother that you said. And he says, I'm going to hold you all in prison and send one of you back to get him. And then on the third day, he lets all them all out and takes Shimon and sends them all home. Bayomar shlishi shel shvatim. Bayomar seif aliyem, bayomar shlishi. And the text says, on the third day, Yosef said, Zot dasua talim abichu talim ani arei. Good. What does this have to do with either Yakedah or the pasuk in Hosea? Bayomar shlishi shel matan Torah. This is our pasuk. What's that? The morning of the third day, we're going to read about that later on, there's thunder and lightning and all that, and God's presence comes onto the mountain. We now have four references to a third day that seem to have nothing to do with each other. The only thing you could find in common is Avraham and Matan Torah is a mountain. That's about it. All right? And if we're to take a page from Donovan, first there's a mountain, then there isn't a mountain. All right? Bayom HaShlishi Shel Meraglim. Now, which Meraglim is this? Is the real Meraglim. This is Yoshua's spies that he sent to Yericho, who went off at Rachav's advice, and instead of going east to go back to the camp, they went west into the mountains above Yericho and hid in the caves in the mountains there for 3 days. And then when the posse had stopped looking for them, they went back to the east bank to meet with Yoshua and give the report. Bayom HaShlishi Shel Yonah. Yonah's in the belly of the fish, right, for 3 days, and then he prays and he's out. Bayom HaShlishi Shel Oleh Gola. And this is really bizarre, because in the story, and we'll take a look at the psukim, when Ezra comes with what we call the Aliyah Shniyah, meaning the second wave of Olim, it comes with Ezra a good 70 years after the first Aliyah. And they all camp at this the river, Nar Ahava, and they camp there for 3 days, and then they come to Yerushalayim, or else they come to Yerushalayim and wait in Yerushalayim 3 days, and on the fourth day, they give their donations to the Kohanim. It's really unclear what's going on and what it's doing here. And then, Biyom HaShlishi Shel Tchiyat HaMetim, and they quote the pasuk from Hosea. All of which leads to perhaps the most popular Biyom HaShlishi, which is Biyom HaShlishi Shel Esther. The reason I say it's the most popular is look what happens in the Midrash with this. Esther directs Mordechai to get everybody together and fast for 3 days. And so 3 days, Laila Vayom, which sounds like 72 hours. But that's not what happens, because on the day of the third day, which means it started at some point in the day, and then on the third day, and even if they're all fasting and not drinking, that means it's 50 hours later or so, 2 days plus later, Esther goes into the king and asks the king to come to a party, and that night he and Haman come to the party, or that day they come. On the third day, she put on her royalty. And the Midrash is, she put on the royalty of her parental house. The Midrash has Esther and Mordechai both being descendants of Shaul. Be'ezeschut. So what merit did Esther have to be able to have this? So Rabbanan Amri Bishut Yom Shlishi Shematan Torah. Now you understand what this Midrash is doing here. It's building all sorts of Yom Shlishis from which we can now pick which one of them was the schut that helped Esther. Rabbanan say it's the third day of Matan Torah. Rab Levi Amar Bishut Yom Shlishi Shal Avraham Bayom HaShlishi. And now, full circle, we start by talking about the Akedah, and then we come back to the Akedah. What does this mean? So the end of the Midrash is actually clearer than the rest. The end of the Midrash is simply saying, Esther on her third day came in, and by all rights, the king should have had her executed because she came in without being called. Instead, the king surprisingly favored her, and surprisingly because what does she look like after two and a half days of fasting? And the king favors her and gives her a request, and all the things roll from there and we're saved. So there must have been some schut. What schut was it that Esther's Yom Shlishi was fortuitous? It was either the schut of the Yom Shlishi of Har Sinai or the Yom Shlishi of Avraham. What's going on? Well, one thing that's clear in this Midrash is that the notion of a third day is somehow special. Now, we can take a page from the Maharal if we want to and start getting into numerology and the significance of the number three. Said, I'm not going there, because I think there's something much more human and something much more, quote unquote, real that we have to look at here. But let's take a look at a parallel midrash in Esther Rabbah. Now, Bereshit Rabbah, by the way, is an early midrash. It's a 4th century midrash. Esther Rabbah, this section of Esther Rabbah is maybe 300-400 years later. But notice what happens. And now the midrash makes the following comment. Le'olam ein Yisrael netunim, this is Esther's Biyom HaShlishi. Le'olam ein Yisrael netunim betzara yoter migimol yamim. Am Yisrael is never in trouble for more than 3 days. Really? Really? Do I have to go back to ancient history, to modern history, to extremely current history? Okay. But watch the text. Sharei ba'avraham ti bayom ha'shlishi, ba'isa avraham etena ba'yarta makom erachok. Now, there's a little bit of a problem in this, because what the Midrash is assuming is that when Avraham saw the mountain, he was relieved from his trouble. That's weird. Hashvatim. And on the third day, Yosef brought them out of prison. Okay. Yonah, third day is out of the fish. Which means the image is people will die and on the third day they'll be brought back to life. And again, I'm surprised by the silence of the use of this pasuk in early polemic. So now this midrash doesn't say that Esther's nace happened bischut one of the other ones, but rather it's part of a pattern that we're in trouble for 2 days, and on the third day we're saved. The third day of their fasting, all right. What's going on? So there's actually a third midrash I want to look at, and then we're going to look at the psukim and we'll talk about it. Third midrash I want to look at because I think this will actually start us in a direction of understanding the significance of the third day, which then drives the whole drasha at the beginning here of the third month and the third born of the family, etc. Midrash Tanchuma, which is a later midrash on Bereshit on the Akedah, asks the following question: V'lama bayom ha'shlishi, v'lo bayom ha'shon, v'lo bayom ha'sheni. In other words, the midrash is taking this from a different perspective. The other midrashim assumed these things are all had happened on the third day because on the third day we're relieved from trouble. The midrash Tanchuma says, why didn't God just take Avram straight to the Akedah? By the way, if you walk from Beersheba, which is evidently from where Avram left, to Yerushalayim, it should be a day walk, a day and a half, not 3 days. Which means the midrash's assumption here is that God is laying him around a little bit till he gets him there. Why the third day? Why not the first or second day? And if you remember, we saw this a couple of years ago, there's a very broad midrashic direction that the entire thing of the Akedah was there for the purposes of making an impression on the nations. Shelo yomru umota olam, hamamo v'halach v'shachat ebno. We don't want the nations to say that God shocked him and he went and killed his kid. If he had actually his wits about him, he would not have done what God had told him to do. He wouldn't have offered his son up. L'chach b'yom ha'shlishi. And I want to use this as a starting point. I want you to think about what a traumatic event is like on the day, and it could be hearing about a tragedy, is like on the day that you hear about it. And by the way, you could argue that if you hear about it at 7 at night and at 7 in the morning, it's different. I don't think so. I mean, it is. You have 3 hours to think about it before your day is over and go to sleep, or you have 15 hours. Okay. But I think that there is a fundamental experience of the first day, the day in which the trauma happens or you find out about it, which is psychologically unique and is halachically unique. And I'll give you an example from halacha. An avel, a mourner, is chayav in all the mitzvot in the Torah with one exception. What mitzvah is an avel exempt from? He's exempt from the mitzvah of tefillin. But only when? Only by Yom HaRishon. And Yom HaRishon means the day on which his relative died and he buried him. Means it has to be the same day. His relative died that day. He buried him that day. And now he's bereft of his glory. He can't wear his pe'er, his glory, and he's not allowed to wear tefillin that day. Starts wearing tefillin the next day. In other words, an avel's experience on the day of death, and especially if it's the day of death and the day of burial, is the most intense. It's not just the most intense. It's not like more than the second day. It's qualitatively different. Halachically, we have a din d'oraita called onein. What we call an onein is somebody who hasn't yet buried their dead. But the Torah's use of the word onein is actually a mourner. And aninut d'oraita is the first day. And the first day can be if they died at 6 in the morning or at 5 in the afternoon. That day is the first day. Because there's something psychologically that happens when we get terrible news, when a shock happens, or when we get exciting news, or when we get anxiety-driving news or information. The day of it is a day of confusion, a day of upsetness, a day of inability to really make a decision about things. So what's the second day? The second day should be the day of sitting back and thinking about it, weighing it out. Now, in the case of somebody who died and you buried them, weighing out is much more weighing out, how do I feel about this? And how am I going to deal with this? And where do I put this into my celestial order and in my theological relationship? But when somebody, for instance, gets terrible news that they're doing big layoffs in your business, then there's the first day, which is shock. And often people will drink or they'll go to sleep. They'll do something to try to avoid the shock, but you're in shock. The second day is the day of thinking, what am I going to do about it? The third day is the day of decision, the day of resolution. Take a look at this last midrash, and then we're going to bounce it backwards. Had Hashem said to Avraham, go take Yitzchak and slaughter him, and Avraham went that day and slaughtered him, everybody's impression would be, yeah, God said to him, and he was in shock, and he just went and didn't even think. But had he had time to think, he wouldn't have done it. So then the midrash only answered for the first day. Why didn't the midrash say, fine, so why not the second day? The answer is the second day you are in process. Now, by the way, I'm going to now get very liberal. When I say first day and I say second day, usually that means day. So today, Wednesday, is the first day. Tomorrow is the day of thinking, and Friday is the day of resolution. But sometimes it could be a period of time. And on a national landscape, it can be longer. Now, why not the second day? Because the second day is a day of thinking about it, of weighing it, of mulling over the opportunities and the choices and the options. And the third day is the day of resolution. Let's go back and see it. In this first midrash, Yosef, the brothers come in to get food. What happens? They are thrown into an absolute shock. The leader of Egypt suspects them of being spies. He's treating them terribly relative to everybody else. They have money. They're ready to pay. He treats them terribly. He throws them in prison. They're in prison. They're in prison for 3 days. So you have to assume that the day that they get thrown in prison, that first day is a day of shock. The second day is discussion. What are we doing here? What are we going to do? And the third day is the day in which their fate is resolved. And they're brought out. And Yosef says, okay, don't worry about it. I'm only going to keep one of you. I fear God. Go back, etc. Yonah. I think we misread the Midrash. I did it intentionally. It's not that Yonah is in the fish for 3 days and gets thrown out after 3 days. What is it Yonah does on the third day? He prays. On the third day, he davens. The first day, it's a shock. He was thrown into the sea. He thought he was going to die. That seems to be what he wanted to do. Instead, he gets eaten by fish. He's inside a fish. And then he's got a whole second day to think it over, mull it over. What am I doing here? What am I going to do? And on the third day, he comes to his decision. I'm going to live. And he prays. And look at his tefillah. It's all about coming back to Yerushalayim. Right? I'm going to see your holy place. And each one of these events has that particular component to it. So I want to take you to this week's parsha. But first, I want to go to where this midrash started, which is the Akedah. Avraham is given this command, which is a shock. Avraham has the day of the shock, or from early in the morning all day, a second day to be thinking about it. What does this mean? And how am I going to tell Sarah? And what does this mean for the future? And all of God's promises. And where do I put all of this? And on the third day, he's able to come to a decision. And he gets up there to do the Akedah. Now let's roll this back to this week's parsha. If you take a look at the psukim, these are the psukim from the different things that we saw. Parenthetically, there is one other biyomash lishi the midrash left out, but I want to include it in here. There's one that would have been obvious, which is third day for the butler and the baker, but that really doesn't fit because that wasn't up to them. It's just happening. It's their fate. But there's another yomash lishi, one in halacha, which I think actually fits this very well. If you're tameh, you're tameh either for that day or for 7 days. That's it. And on the last day of your tumah, you go to the mikvah, and when the sun sets, you're tahor. That's it, nightfall. Except for one exception, and that's tumat meit. Tumat meit, which from some perspectives is considered to be the most grievous and serious tumah, when you become tumat meit, on the third day of that experience, you have to have a purification ceremony. It's not the complete one. You have to have one on the seventh day when you're finished. Because all purification ceremonies take place when you're done. This is the only purification ceremony that takes place in the middle of the process. And it's by Yom HaShlishi. Because encounter with death is a shock. And then the second day is a day to kind of process that shock. And the third day, you're ready to start becoming tahor. By Yom HaShlishi, you get your first spritz, your first vaccination, if you will. Your first spritz of Mechatat. When you look at Matan Torah, you notice, as I said, the time scope could be a little different on a national level. Am Yisrael experienced this tremendous, shocking experience. Shock doesn't have to be bad. Of Yitziat Mitzrayim. Makat Bechorot had to be an unbelievable experience for them. They go in their houses, they're eating the korban, they're hearing screaming from all over. The king of Egypt comes down to their place in the middle of the night and says, get out of the country. They march out. It's amazing. And then Yam Suf. And then Mara, and then Man, and then Mimrivan, Amalek, you name it. All sorts of crazy experiences. They're all happening in this time. And now, from the third month, they finally have had time to sort of internalize and sort of become good with this experience. But notice what happens. God says to Moshe, go tell them to be ready for the third day. And on the third day, I'm going to come down to Har Sinai. And on the third day, what happened? The mountain is smoking, and God comes down and talks to them. Now, we have halachic reasons to argue for the third day, and plitat shichat zera, etc. But there's something else going on here. Am Yisrael has now arrived at Har Sinai. They're ready to take the three-month experience and turn it into a three-day process. The first day is God says he wants to make a brit with you. Shock. We're ready to do it, but we need a day to process what that means. This means for the rest of our existence as a nation, we are bound to a brit with Ribono Shel Olam. We're not going to be the same people anymore. Not our kids, not our grandchildren, anything. And we're ready on the third day to come and meet God and make the brit. And so the notion of a B'yom HaShlishi as being a day of resolution, as being a day of after the first shock of whatever the announcement was or the experience was on the first day, and a full 24-hour period to think it over, to process it, to internalize it, to come to some reality, real kind of relationship with it, then on the third day, we're ready to act. On the third day, we're ready to do an Akedah. On the third day, we're ready to come into the king. On the third day, I'm ready to dive into Hashem to let me out of this fish so I can do my job. And on the third day, I'm ready to meet HaKadosh Baruch Hu and accept a brit. The connection of the 3 days here is not serendipitous. It's very deliberate. It's a pattern that starts at the Akedah. And when that Galilean said, B'rich Rachman, etc., some of these may be serendipitous. You can argue that Moshe being the third one of the family, okay, that's nice. Kohen Levi Yisrael, that's nice. But the last two, on the third day in the third month, are deliberate and speak to the mode of thinking and experience that we have to have coming into Matan Torah and understanding that Am Yisrael accepts the Torah as full partners who have processed the challenge and have processed the opportunity and the blessing and have taken it full, have taken it upon themselves with a full commitment.